Coming up, the Brooklyn Nets go into Philadelphia with, let's just say, a fully healthy roster, and somehow find themselves losing to what I can only describe as the 76ers B squad. We break down, though, the performance from Ben Simmons as he continues to try to improve his game this season, some of the rotation question marks we had, and the obvious glaring issues on the defensive end. All coming up next.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yes, friends, it is the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. Over there, you're going to find Doug Norrie, owner-operator of DFSR, for all your daily fantasy sports rankings from DraftKings to FanDuel. He's got you covered. I'm Adam Arbrecht, breaking down the New York Football Giants on the One Giant podcast. My boy, Andy Mack, we thank you for making us your first listen of the day, free on all those great platforms. And Doug, you know, I wish this had gone another way, but like the true hero that I am, I showed up anyway to host this podcast. How are we feeling after the embarrassing loss for Brooklyn?
Oh, terrible. What a brutal loss. It's so bad. It's so bad on so many levels. I'm laughing because it's like you really couldn't have scripted it worse. It really is one of those things where
this is what we do.
Everything is lined up perfectly for this to not only be a W, an easy W, right? Like your significant favorites. Philly has nobody, I mean, in terms of superstar talent. Nets getting sort of everyone back here, Yuta Watanabe aside. And it's just like, and then you get, you're like, oh, what a soft landing for Simmons, who we'll talk about here in a second. He's headed back to Philly, but they don't have to face any of the sort of any of the music with the other guys coming back the other way, except for Doc. And they just absolutely tank it. It's just hilarious. It's hilarious. Like, could it go any other way with this team? Just when you think they got you right where they want you, you're starting to feel pretty good. You're like, Simmons is looking good. It's all lining up. And then they just pull the rug. It really is wash, rinse, repeat with this team. It's hilarious. What are you going to do? How can you do anything but laugh? It's like nothing changes with this team. It's amazing.
Just when I thought you couldn't be any dumber, you go and pull a move like this. We're going to get into Ben Simmons first and foremost here, the defense, the rotations, everything else. But, you know, bad news, friends. I made a pretty bold proclamation publicly. There's no Thanksgiving coming because I assumed that this was going to be the kind of game that we got to come on here laughing at how good it looked for Brooklyn. That was not the case. So we did say, though, coming into this game, the last two games for Ben Simmons, and you mentioned their soft landing spot. You thought, okay, with all these players out for Philadelphia, Ben Simmons can go back to Philadelphia, get booed on every single touch that he has throughout the entire game, and then hopefully put together a respectable performance. He actually put together a nice performance for himself. He was ready for this game.
Yeah, that's the amazing part of this whole thing is that Simmons was actually really good, which makes it even just double terrible that they end up losing the game because Simmons, you know, if you told yourself a story around this game where you're like, okay, the boos really got to him and he looked just stiff and they end up losing the game and then you start to tell yourself like a weird story around what the rest of the season looks like. And it's one game. So I want to remind everyone of that. But then where the part where Simmons comes out and actually looks really good, like actually, frankly, energized by the crowd, especially early. He looked really energized and aggressive really early and really maintained that for the whole game. He played really well. It was just everything else was a mess. And that's the part. That's actually the most hilarious part of this whole thing because you would think they would go together, right? You think it would be, oh, Simmons, you know, cowers in the face of a hostile Philly crowd, right? And the Nets have trouble, you know, kind of making up the difference. Except that's just not even what happened. So if you told someone before the game and said something along the lines of Simmons is going to play one of his best games of the year. Mm-hmm. You'd be like, and it's against this undermanned Philly team. You'd be like, the Nets win by 40? What would be the scenario? And it's just for it to go even the opposite direction of that. It's just such an absolute head scratcher.
Yeah. On the one hand, it's a head scratcher. On the other hand, it's like totally consistent with what the Brooklyn Nets have had go on for them. But And I, you know, tongue in cheek say that Simmons had 3 blocks in this game, 3 steals in this game, all those things. I'm just going to pull out one of the nuggets that I liked specifically from him on the defensive end, which will go against the grain of what we saw in this game overall. But we were waiting so much about the confidence offensively. But the more we looked at these games, we also remembered and reminded everybody, picks up a lot of fouls here, can't seem to, you know, get out of his own way defensively, has been fouling out a lot. I liked seeing, and I know I'm trying to find a moment here for him on that end of the court, or the team on that end of the court. He seemed to be rotating side to side defensively in almost this free safety defensive role a lot of the times, and helping out on weak side blocks, helping out in other defensive areas. Now, everything else wasn't necessarily working around him, but that did seem like something additional to what kind of the base has been for him so far these last two, now three games.
Yeah, I want to talk about the defense here a little later in the shows. And yeah, that's what I mean, just him mess.
Specifically.
Yeah, it was like an overhelping mess. And like there, and we got, look, we try to start with like the one positive here only because it is Simmons. And I agree with you. I think that the defense for him, like when they do that, I think there is going to be a world where it works. And I just think in general, if you want to take any good from this game, and believe me, it's tough, but if you want to take a good from this game, it's that. Of all the games where Simmons could have been really, really bad and had a lot of excuses and fed a narrative around him, the only positive, and believe me, this is the only one, the only positive from this game is that at least you don't walk out with the Simmons isn't up for it narrative. Like
fragile like Simmons.
That would have been the easiest one. That was an absolute windmill dunk ready to come if he looks bad in any shape or form. The fact that he didn't, if you want to use anything, and again, we're grasping here, but if you want to use anything to take from this one, I think you can feel okay that Simmons walked into a very hostile, I mean, not real hostile, sports hostile environment, right? With a group of people, there's really, I challenge you to find another fan base that wants to see a single player fail as much as the Philly fans want to see Ben Simmons. That is not hyperbole. That is right. The truth. Like these guys, these fans, especially the hardcore Sixers ones, are nuts for him to be terrible. Like, believe me, if you're not on Twitter or these other places, you don't see it. It's for sure. So the fact that with all that lined up against it, and you could hear them, you could see them, you know, the shirts, everything was going. They at least don't walk out of the game with that as bulletin board material. Nothing else was good, but that one would have been one of the easiest ones and it didn't happen.
Yeah. And I thought before the game, they talked to him, they asked him about Philly. I think he, you know, again, this is, from a PR perspective, but I thought that his energy was right because he came into it saying, I got nothing but respect for a lot of the people in Philadelphia, respect the fan base. I expect it to be hostile. I expect them to be, you know, booing me, et cetera. Like he seemed very much prepared for what it was going to look like. Even was interacting. Like he was playing with a little bit of a cockiness that we haven't seen from him as a Brooklyn Net. And again, only these last few games where you'd think he would have a reason to be cocky. I will throw in just as the extra bonus for him, 11 assists. Like if you're two guys that put down a sizable bet at the start of the year for him to lead the league in assists, this is a good sign in the right direction.
I can't believe we're even still thinking about that. I forgot. Yeah. I wrote that one off long ago.
Problem is, Doug, once we make the miss, we gotta carry that thing over our backs all the way down the beach. He's just outside like, the top 60 in the league right now. I think there's still a chance. but it was a good example of him offensively distributing again, just the rhythm and the energy that he's been able to play with. The fluidity was there. It's hard to compartmentalize this, but I still think that this was not as good as the last game for him, but it was another step in the right direction of, I don't know, give me 4, give me 5, give me 6 games in a row like this. And then I stop wondering if there's going to be a letdown for Ben.
Yeah. Like I don't think we walk out of questions here. He looks completely healthy. We have questions around the rest of the team and we might even have questions around his fit on the team. Right. I think these are still lingering issues that are not solved. I don't think the entire Ben Simmons experience is anywhere close to solved here. Like there's other issues, which we'll get into later in this podcast around like his overall fit with some of the other personnel on the team. But again, just to reiterate, this game, the major concern, like the national talking point for this game was teed up for TNT, for all of it, to be teed up to be a national game where there was probably a certain contingent of people and not just Sixers fans that would have loved, it would have been much easier to have things to talk about were Simmons to have gone over 6, look super timid, right? Like fouled out in 20 minutes, like all these different ways it could have gone. And that just doesn't happen. Again, the Nets are kind of a mess after this loss, but like it's not a Simmons related thing. All right. we got more to talk about here. We're going to talk about the Nets defense, or, you know, whatever the semblance of that showed up on the court tonight. We're going to talk about the size and the rebounding, obviously, as well, because these are continued talking points among the Nets faithful in terms of where it is, you know, sort of problematic areas. First, going to tell you about our friends over at Turo, the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want wherever you want it from a community of local hosts. You browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget. It's all across the US, the UK, Canada, coming soon to our friends down under over there in Australia. Book a spacious SUV or minivan for a family road trip. You can grab a classic or luxury car for a special event, a birthday or a holiday. Even grab an economy car if you're on a budget. Just need to get from point A to, you know, where it is, point B. Test drive that new electric vehicle you had your eye on. See how it fits with your everyday life. Turo's got you covered for all of these different scenarios and more. Many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms and conditions and exclusions apply. Forget boring car rentals and find your drive at Turo.com.
So 115-106, the Brooklyn Nets lose to the Philadelphia 76ers. Don't kid yourself. It was not that close. Jacques Vaughn and the Nets waved the white flag a little over 3 minutes to go. I'll touch on this briefly before we get into the defense, because we were mentioning it before we started that on the broadcast on TNT, they were like, poof, you know, long ways to go yet in this one, getting out of there a little bit early if you're Jacques Vaughn. And I was like, no. There is no more thing to do here. And so much of that was tied to the defensive side of the court, where the Brooklyn Nets, for all the positives we tried to there selectively put onto Ben Simmons, this was as bad as the defense, I think, has looked, even relative to that 153-point disaster against the Kings. Remember who you're playing on the Philadelphia 76ers, and then just the repeated errors that just seem to be happening possession in, possession out, especially when we talk about perimeter defense closing out wide open looks, 16 to 32 from deep for the Sixers.
Oh my goodness. I mean, like, it was so bad. The point of attack defense, it's not even point of attack, because it was more just like switching and over helping and just getting, you know, caught and trying to keep guys out of the lane, yeah, and then just leaving wide open shooters. The Sixers shot 50%, 16 for 32 from three. None of them looked outside of like a Furkan Korkmaz sort of off balance shot. None of them looked all that difficult. They were rarely contested. And it's not like this is, you know, a second coming of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson over here. This is Shake Milton, D'Anthony Melton, guys like this. I mean, you know, Niang and Korkmaz can shoot, but it's not like this team you would think would come in and just be able to shoot the total lights out of the building. And none of it looked hard. The Nets were completely discombobulated around the perimeter. They were switching everything, except that when the ball would get into the lane at times, they would send a help, like Simmons would help or something like that, and then they wouldn't be able to close out the three. They had a million offensive rebounds that led to more threes. So it was the second chance points were, again, a total mess. It all combined to just be really tough to watch. Like, it was so bad on the defensive end, kind of in every level. Right. Yeah. Like, every level was bad. They couldn't stop anything from three, because they couldn't just body up any of these shooters at all. They got lost on switches, and then they would get back cut and layup line to death. Like, even that happened a little bit more early on. It was just all bad across the board. And even when they would get like a mini stop, the Sixers just got an offensive rebound. So it wasn't like nothing. It was just a complete onslaught, most of which was the Nets' own doing.
Yeah, there wasn't. Yeah, that's the other part of it too. I mean, especially when you think about the lineup that you're taking on here, a lot of it was kind of self-inflicted wounds. I'll highlight two players here. We know we're going to get into rotation specific stuff in a minute, but we've talked about Joe Harris, and this can be a both and. Obviously, he has a terrible shooting night, but then even more important, not more importantly, but relative to the way at least I've talked about him early in the season. Hey, he's coming back from an injury. That shot eventually you assume is going to fall. And he is trying to do a lot of the things away from the basketball that you at least say it's serviceable. But tonight it wasn't serviceable in any form or fashion, specifically with him at that guard and inside of some of those rotations where they were. This is you, by the way, Doug, pointing out they were just hunting him down the way that we always fear Patty Mills gets hunted down when he's out there.
Late when they knew the Nets were switching everything around the perimeter, there was at least four possessions where they hunted out the final switch to be Harris. Like, it was wash, rinse, repeat again with wanting to just get, you know, Tobias Harris on him or another guard onto him by just running through running through the pass off of the different switches and kind of knowing it was going to happen and ending with Harris, who then just couldn't stop anybody. I mean, mostly Tobias. Sorry, there's two Harrises here. It was Tobias on to Joe Harris. I don't want to make this game all about Joe Harris because there was other problems. He was awful. So there's no excuse for that part of it. I don't think he's the only reason they lost, but he sure didn't contribute in any other way. It was probably his worst game of the season, just between the shooting, the defensive miscues. He mishandled the ball a couple times. He got like a couple shots blocked. I mean, it was really, there was no positives from the Harris angle, but really it was just thematic of the entire Nets experience here. The defensive end, I don't know if it's a combination of disinterested, not knowing what's going on, and then you combine that with being a little undersized, even against, you know, a B team squad. Like, there's just too much to make up. You can't be all those things, right? You can't be discombobulated, undersized, and lack energy. Like, when all three of those combine, this is what happens. This is exactly what happens. The other team shoots 50% from three, and they get every offensive rebound, and you just lose. You can't win in that scenario.
And it's hard too, because I was slightly just flashing over the box score with Kevin Durant putting up 20 points on 9 of 14. Again, like a kind of a relatively quiet night for him. Kyrie Irving, we're specifically talking about the defensive side of it. This is one of those instances, by the way, if I'm going to give, not passes, but if I'm going to give wiggle room to a lot of guys who are coming off of injury or coming back into it, we've been so used to when Kyrie Irving comes back from whatever may be his absence from the team, he's one of those rare guys that steps on the court and looks absolutely locked in. He was a little bit quieter offensively the first game. This game, he gets his looks, but not in the kind of dominating take over the game way that you would like to see it. And then defensively, which is the entire team, by the way, like the entire team, but he was about as lackadaisical on that and as you could be as well.
Yeah, like there's really no superlatives. We spent.
I just want to bring on another.
We cooked our first 10 minutes on Simmons, and then, like, because there was really nothing else to be positive about here. Yeah. And, to point out, it's tough to, like, point out a single bad actor here with the way things went.
No,
but the Nets, but again, like, the way you allow substandard teams to beat you, right? Like, the only, really kind of the only way that it can happen, because usually talent will win out, right? Like, in the aggregate, talent wins. That's just why a 7-game series, for the most part, the better team in the playoffs and the finals is going to win, because talent and to some degree coaching will just come to the top. Like, there's just, that's just how basketball works. Like, it doesn't work. But the way you allow lesser teams into games, and the Nets have done this, you know, time and time again at times, is to fail at these sort of fundamental parts of the game that just will make it ultimately easier for the other team to get enough threes, enough good looks, enough second chances. If you give any group of players that, like, they're going to make it a game. Like, if you're good enough to be in the NBA and you're going to allow those things to happen against you, most players, no matter what the Nets' talent is, like, most players on the other side will be able to stick in the game, because that's just, like, you just win too many little battles. And that's, this game was, it was like every possession was like that.
Well, that's like, you know, you look at Melton with his 22, 16 for Milton.
None of them were hard. Sorry to cut you off. None of those points were difficult. They were all easy.
That's like the, maybe it's why I'm just speaking to some of the smaller players. And we know Harris is sometimes getting caught up playing, against a power forward in the course of this game. But a lot of the backcourt defensively ends up becoming a pretty consistent issue against the team you expect to beat. But you have to at least be able to go toe to toe and outplay some of these. And then you see Paul Reed come off the bench with the 19. I'm not going to drill down on any specific possessions here, but when you look over the box score and just watch the game by the eye test, seeing those players have such easy and consistent access to their rhythm shooting is really what it comes down to. It wasn't disruptive. And I think the one thing that I sometimes get caught in, especially early in this year, where we've seen how good Kevin Durant has been on both ends of the floor. You have Ben Simmons out there. You have Nicholas Claxton out there. You want to think, if this had been Embiid and, you know, and the starters for Philly, I wouldn't necessarily have the same sentiment. But you're within earshot of this game all the way through. You take a lead at one point back after having a 10-2 run to start this thing. You thought it was going to be the blowout. You can't get the stops. Like, you can't find a way to three or four possessions of getting stops just to see if the offense can carry the load for you. That's probably the biggest frustration out of one that I'll easily bury in the rear view and not think about. But that's the part of it where, like, you have enough of the personnel to get key stops in key moments, and they haven't been able to do that with consistency.
Yeah, no, they haven't been. And then once, and it was like a situation where once Philly sort of smelled blood in the water and were finding things that were just going to work, like getting into the lane, knowing that a help defender was going to tag and just like try to help a little bit, and they were going to find an open shooter, like sort of, or like once they could get Harris on the Harris, things like this, like once they knew those things were going to work and not having to worry too much about, even if you miss, like having with a high level of confidence that you were going to get the ball back even after a miss. Like those things,
20-4 kinda, offensive rebounds, which you pointed out pre-show.
It was 20. Yeah, 20-4. Sorry, I cut you off. Yeah, it was 20-4 in the offense. I mean, that's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Like, and I don't even. And that's actually beyond. We're gonna switch over to the rotations here in a second. But the 20-4 is beyond just we can't ring in with just like the Nets need a center. That's an effort issue. Like this, it's an effort issue. It's not just a size issue. When you get absolutely dominated like this on the offensive rebounding glass, it's not just that the Nets have three players that they started that are 7 feet tall. It's not necessarily all a size thing, right? I get they don't have a ton of girth. They started three guys. I know Simmons isn't 7 feet. They started three guys 6'10 or above. Right. At that point, losing the offensive rebounding game 20-4 is an effort thing. It's right. Like that's all it is. It's just a lack of effort and a lack of staying committed to sort of the task. So I know people are going to jump in about the center thing, but like it's definitely more than that. All right, we'll talk about this rotation thing here in a second as well. Going to talk to you first about our friends over at betonline.net, your number one source for betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Our friends over at BetOnline had the Nets -8 going into this game. And a little nugget here, no team in the league has been worse against the spread than the Brooklyn Nets over the last couple of years. Just one of the many things you're going to find over there at Bet Online. You get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there. Football, soccer, basketball, esports, it's all over there at betonline.net. If you love sports podcasts like this one, you're going to find those at Bet Online as well. We're always the fastest and easiest way to get your betting fix. Head on over to the website today and that mobile device to learn more. Bet Online, where the game starts.
And of course, we always thank you for making the Locked On Nets podcast your first listen of the day. Why don't you make the second listen, Locked On Sports Today? From the games that matter most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with the local analysis that only the Locked On Podcast Network can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. And this was the one thing that from the beginning, which they went on a 10-2 run to start the game, so it's hard to necessarily lean into it. But for the starting rotation in this one, obviously Ben's been playing well, and you would assume that he's getting closer to being in that starting lineup than not. But having Nicholas Claxton reinserted back into that rotation with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Royce O'Neal, I'm not saying that I know exactly what the solution is, or if it's just a simple, that's it, put Nicholas Claxton automatically coming off the bench. But I was surprised that they went back to the thing that from Steve Nash over to Jacques Vaughn, you've gotten some consistent sample sizes here that tell us it's not going to work at least consistently enough where you don't end up running into real issues.
Yeah, I was surprised by that as well. And that was not actually a thing that was initially announced. I think it was announced that it was going to be Claxton back to the bench and Simmons was going to start. And then it was changed. I actually don't know if the Nets changed it themselves or if the news was misreported. Mm. But either way, I'm only mentioning this because when it was mentioned that Claxton was going back to the bench or going to the bench and Simmons was going to start, that made sense to me as I'm doing like some minutes projections. And then as it was reannounced that Claxton was going to start with Simmons, I was like, huh, okay. I'm interested that they're going back there. I do think that the Nets are in a very tricky spot with this because we briefly talked about this before the show, but the problem here is, let's just say at worst, Simmons and Claxton are, let's agree that Simmons and Claxton are in your top five best players right now, right? Like, let's say whatever order you want to order them, let's say KD and Kyrie are 1-2, and then whichever order we put in 3-4-5, Claxton and Simmons are going to be in those next three players, right? Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. So with that as the premise, the problem here is that because those guys are now in the top five of best players overall, you sort of kind of have to start them together because you want to put your best players out there. Except that in this very specific situation, their skills do not complement each other at all. And so you get put in this terrible spot because you are then effectively having to play one of your top five best players much less than you would ever want to do in any normal situation. But what do you do, right? Like, I don't know. Like, they're cutting off their nose to spite their face. Like, they don't have a solution here. So I get why they do it. But at the same time, you can just see all the problems in it, too. So I don't know what the solution is. It's like you have to not start one of them and not play them together as much. And that probably makes you worse also. Like, I don't really know the solution.
Yeah, I think I won't be shocked if it isn't the starting rotation tomorrow. You mentioned about it being reported one way and then switching to, from Claxton.
Again, that might have just been misreported from, right. an outlet. I'm not positive about that.
Right, and either way, maybe the quick switch is just to say, okay, Nicholas Claxton, you're going to come off the bench. The other detriment to this, I think, too, is I'm not going to say I'm going to push back on the idea of, but we talked about this before, the best players and the combinations of it, like, if you convinced me that there's a version of the second unit that has Ben Simmons leading, that just makes all the sense in the world, at least in the short term, I can continue to say, hey, you're playing really well. We're just going to, let's not mess with what's working for us. Right. And one of the reasons maybe why you do that, you can flip it the other way if you want, but we know over the last few games when he was coming off the bench, Nicholas Claxton, before he missed, I think only one, maybe two games, his relationship with Kevin Durant has looked that much stronger on the court. Their chemistry has been really good. But when you put Ben Simmons out there, it just diminishes Nicholas Claxton. Like, that's what ends up happening in these scenarios. Claxton gets a little bit diminished. They don't work well together to begin with. And then you end up having two non-shooters inside of the starting rotation that has, yes, a Royce O'Neal, who's also an offensive player, but not at the level that you'd want him to be. I mean, we talked about Yuta Watanabe not being available in this game. A player like that, you want to call him Yuta Watanabe because he's playing so great for the Nets right now, great. But they need to have someone that has that little bit of extra athleticism and then figure out the right combination. I think Claxton ends up going to the bench. I wouldn't be shocked as soon as tomorrow night, just because you can't, for a team that's trying to figure things out, you can't stop doing the things that have been working. And that felt like what they did by re-putting this starting lineup together tonight.
Yeah, just the on-off court numbers tell you what your eye already sees, right? Like, you already know it's going to get worse after tonight because this is not from PBP stats fully updated from tonight's game. But, like, Nick Claxton and Durant together, fine. That's a winning unit. With no Simmons, that's a winning unit, right? Plus 4.73. You're fine with it. Durant plus Simmons with no Claxton, about even, but the offense is really, really good, right? So you're like, you can live with it. And then when you get Durant, Claxton, and Simmons together, I'm using Durant because I'm just using it like with the best player on the court, right? So like, you want to try to give yourself the best out anyway, minus 8.76. And again, it's going to get worse after tonight. Yeah. So the numbers tell you the thing that your eyes can see. And I agree with you. It is a shame because Claxton is a good player. Like, I'm not going to entertain ideas that he's not a good player. He's a starting center in the NBA, definitely. Like, that's just not even an independent opinion. Go ask actual X's and O's basketball people about this. Like, it's not a debate. It's undebatable. The problem is, like what you said, is that in these situations, it will make him look like he's not because the situation is so stacked against him. Whereas, like, when they were running these two-man game with like Simmons, with Durant and Claxton before, and like he doesn't have to worry about spacing issues and things like that, it looks much better. And it does Simmons dirty too. Like, right. It does both of them dirty in these situations. So it's just like poorly constructed. And again, I don't know the solution because it really stinks to not play these guys a decent amount of minutes. Like, both of them on regular NBA teams would be playing real quality minutes, and it's probably going to be Claxton that goes, but like, that just stinks because he's played well enough to not have that be the case.
Yeah, and we've heard whispers of TJ Warren coming back some point, getting revalued at the start of December. When he gets maybe back into this rotation too, combined with the Yuta Watanabe, like, You can start to dream on second units or on combinations when Claxton and Simmons are on the floor and Durant is off and maybe Kyrie is off too, but you have the kind of scorers on there with them that you can get. I think at those points, sometimes their value can be better together than with a Kevin Durant because someone's falling out of that rhythm on the offensive end specifically. So, I mean, maybe there's a world where you can get to it. I guess the other thing to dream on here, because I'll be, by the way, as we close this one out, Doug will be giving you that post-game presser tomorrow. I will be heading off to the holidays a little bit early. So awesome. Something that I'll be chewing on, though, is the idea of, can Nicholas Claxton be a poor man's Ben Simmons in the second unit just from a ball handling and distributing standpoint? We know that he did it back in the day. His skill set is not nearly there. So don't ever think that I'm suggesting he's going to be getting 11 assists in a game. But if he can function enough, I think in a ball handling capacity, like just triggering the offense from the defensive end, like that's how I think how he carves out a successful role if you're going to take him out of the starting lineup. It gets weird. And these guys are going to cross over their minutes, but maybe you're right. It's just disappointing that he's one of the best players on the team, and yet you're at an impasse because Ben Simmons' name and contract tells you that he'll have to always be the starter.
And Simmons should play over him. Like, yeah. I don't even want to suggest that, like, this version of Simmons. Sorry, this version of Simmons. I'm crying here. This version of Simmons
emotional
should be playing over Claxton. I guess what I'm saying is these aren't mutually exclusive ideas. Because Nick Claxton has trouble playing with Ben Simmons, does not mean Nick Claxton is not a good basketball player. I think sometimes people are doing this weird transitive property thing where because of this, then this other thing is true. But that's just not the case. It's just this is not the right situation for him. Okay, we are going to stick around here for a little bit. We're live on YouTube. Thanks for everyone that jumped in here to do a little therapy with us as we kind of work our way through the loss. We haven't done an extra live YouTube, so we're going to do that here for a little bit. We're going to close out the regular podcast. Make sure you are subscribed over on YouTube, Locked On Nets. Join the march to 4,000, hoping to get to 4,000 before the new year. That's the goal right now. So be part of the group that jumps into the Locked On Nets subscriber and set your alerts so you'll know that we're going live. We're going live just about after every game. So subscribe over at Locked On Nets on YouTube.
And of course, whatever nightmares the futures hold are but dreams compared to what's behind me. Gamora.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets, American? I'm not
Zoe
sure.
Zoe Saldana from Guardians
of the Galaxy. That Gamora. I thought it was like someone else. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, there you go. One of the all-time great poets.
Oh, that Gamora.
The real one. All right, we'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.